You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Guccifer 2.0 is back, but few are buying what they're selling. Experts continue to warn of Russian information operations directed against the perceived legitimacy of U.S. elections. International norms of cyber conflict. IoT-based DDoS concerns rise with wide distribution of Mirai source code. Flashpoint finds Floki bot for sale in the underground. More trouble for Yahoo, M&A news, and a dating site is breached. I'm Dave Bittner, back in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, October 5th, 2016. The news today is heavier on hacking in its information operational guise that is on cybercrime, hacktivism, or espionage. The big eclat, of course, is again provided by Guccifer 2.0, who has resurfaced with some material he, she, or they claim to have hacked from the Clinton Foundation. The release is surrounded by clouds of muckraking shock, but on closer inspection, it appears to be recycled stuff purloined from the Democratic Party. Longtime Guccifer 2.0 Observer Motherboard offers the most direct, demotically expressed assessment, which will balderize to hogwash. Guccifer 2.0, if you're keeping score at home, is widely believed, on circumstantial but compelling evidence, to be a sock puppet of Russian intelligence services. This particular mode of information warfare has attracted considerable comment at the AUSA meetings. We'll have more on that later this week. Guccifer 2.0's communique includes a colloquial shout-out to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. WikiLeaks reiterates its plans for weekly data dumps through the U.S. elections, and U.S. fears of election hacking are now centered on the possibility that confidence in the vote's legitimacy could be eroded. In some quick notes on more traditional cybercrime, it's clear that the Internet of Things botnets are, by general consensus, the new normal in attacks on businesses. The gaming industry, dependent as it is on high levels of access, is particularly concerned, but the worries extend to businesses generally. Too much commerce is transacted online for anyone to be blasé about the DDoS threat. Flashpoint warns that a new exploit kit, FlokiBot, is out in the wild. An evolution of Zeus with a noticeably improved dropper, FlokiBot is available for $1,000 a pop on what Flashpoint characterizes as a high-end Russian criminal forum. In what is believed to be the first warning of its kind by a medical device manufacturer, Johnson & Johnson alerts users to the possibility that its insulin pumps are vulnerable to cyber attack. In more bad news for Yahoo, Reuters reports that the company engineered surveillance of its users' emails by U.S. intelligence or law enforcement agencies. With the sense of this being a last straw, advice on how to unsubscribe from Yahoo services is being widely offered across the internet. How this will further affect the company's acquisition agreement with Verizon is undetermined. Not all industry news is bad. Akamai has announced its acquisition of Soha Systems in an all-cash deal. Soha is a provider of enterprise secure access as a service. Carbon Black seems to be progressing toward an IPO. And congratulations are in order for the companies being honored as this year's Cynet 16. They'll be receiving their awards at Cynet's Innovation Showcase in Washington, November 2nd and 3rd. The CyberWire will be there to cover the proceedings. We've been spending this week at the Association of the United States Army's annual meeting and exposition. The experts and leaders speaking at the conference have expressed a very strong commitment to integrating cyber operations at all levels of conflict, from the tactical to the operational, when appropriate, to the strategic. Several of the speakers have drawn a close connection among growing urbanization worldwide, the continued failure of states, and the coming pervasiveness of cyber threats and opportunities. Soldiers operating in urban areas, for example, can and should expect to operate under conditions of continuous electronic surveillance. This will shape the battle space in challenging ways. The greatest uncertainties, speakers have said, cluster around the survival or failure of the institutions in which the U.S.-led post-World War II security order has found expression. The United Nations, NATO, the European Union, the World Bank, the IMF, and others. These institutions are under stress, and their future is unclear. One area requiring clarity is the set of norms that will govern conduct in cyberspace. Professor Thomas C. Wingfield of the National Defense University was a principal author of NATO's Talon Manual, the most influential model for how such norms will look. He sat down with us at the Cyber Pavilion at the AUSA meeting to talk about emerging international norms for conflict in cyberspace. We've encountered an increased commingling of kinetic and cyber warfare, and we've heard a number of times that the norms of cyber conflict remain immature. Do you agree with that?
I agree with it up to a point. The norms of cyber conflict are immature, but the norms of conflict in general are very mature. Most countries agree on most norms almost all of the time, and the trick is in applying those near universal norms to these new cyber targets and these new cyber problems.
You're one of the authors of the Talon Manual, which has acquired the reputation of being one of the more comprehensive and influential sources of the norms in conflict in cyberspace. So how closely does the Talon Manual adhere to other earlier codifications of such international norms, the laws of armed conflict, the law of the sea, the just war tradition?
Very closely. The whole point of the Talon Manual was not to write new law, but rather just take the core of existing law that almost all of the countries agreed on and apply it to a new battlefield, just as we had the San Remo Manual apply law of armed conflict to naval operations and the Air and Missile Warfare Manual do that for that area. It was just meant to take the part we agree on and apply that to cyber operations.
I want to ask you about NATO's Article 5. Some of the newer members of the Atlantic Alliance have been on the receiving end of cyber offensive operations, and we're thinking of Estonia here. Would the alliance be likely to invoke Article 5 over a cyber incident?
If it were sufficiently dangerous situation, if it caused sufficient damage, absolutely. We haven't seen anything in the purely cyber realm that would rise to what we'd call an armed attack, not even a mere use of force. So we're just at the very early stages. If it ever did get to the level of an armed attack, a smoking hole in the ground, a significant loss of life, then there's not a doubt in my mind that Article 5 would be invoked.
Is there any sense or any belief that a cyber attack should require a cyber response?
Under international law, there's absolutely no requirement to use a kinetic response for a kinetic attack or a cyber response for a cyber attack. Once an attack gets to the level, whether it's kinetic or cyber or a mix, gets to the level of armed attack, smoking hole, lives lost, then any mixture of cyber and kinetic in response is permitted, as long as it's proportionate and necessary and follows the other norms that, of course, we follow. There's a strong predisposition to not use kinetic if there's a way to avoid it, because it does result in a smoking hole in the other side. But there are also limitations the other way. Not using cyber weapons because, at least in our decade, they tend to be one-off type of weapons. And by using a capability, we give up a certain architecture of weaponry, and we prefer not to use those silver bullets just yet. We don't. From a legal perspective, it doesn't make any difference, and it's really more of an operational choice. I think that there are two things that are very important, at least in the legal world. One is the need to have an overlap between what the lawyers understand and what operators do. That's why we're hoping, as the next Talon manual, 3.0 is going to be an operational law handbook, we hope, that would look at these problems not from a law professor's perspective, but rather from the questions and problems that operators have now in this immature field. And we hope to be able to build the legal advice in cyber, as the U.S. Army does a great job of doing for the operational law handbook for broad spectrum operations. The second thing, perhaps more interesting, is the rise of lethal artificial intelligence. We're legally responsible for what those agents do at cyber speed, and if they start causing serious damage or perhaps even loss of life in the not too distant future, the last human in the loop, the operator, the commander, we would be on the hook for what those things did in our name. So we would have to train them to know the cyber legal outer limits of what they could do, so we wouldn't end up as war criminals for releasing them into the wild.
It reminds me of, you know, Asimov's rules for robotics.
Absolutely. We would start there and then add on the rules we give to frightened 19-year-olds that we send into combat. The same rules would have to be taught and burned into our AI agents, so that whatever else they did while they're fighting at cyber speed, they would not go afield of the rules that define us as us.
Thomas Wingfield, thanks for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And finally, there's another breach in an online dating and adultery facilitation service. This one's centered in New Zealand and may have affected around 1.5 million users of the mobile apps Have a Fling, Have an Affair, and Hook Up Dating. Who knew the Kiwis were so frisky? You know, if Kiwis weren't flightless birds, we'd advise straighten up and fly right, but we think we'll have to settle for walk the line.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And I'm pleased to be joined by Emily Wilson. She's the Director of Analysis at Terbium Labs. Emily, you at Terbium spend a good amount of time monitoring the dark web. Help us understand, what is the difference between the dark web and the deep web?
So first, kind of by way of definition, we think of the dark web as anywhere our clients wouldn't want to see their information appear online, whether for sale or for vandalism. And so that can include Tor hidden services, these password-protected forums, even some technically clear websites, actually where a lot of fraud lives, kind of top-level domains based in countries that don't care as much. You know, Western Samoa probably isn't going to shut down your carding forum. And then the deep web really isn't as scary as it tends to be presented as. It's kind of anywhere a crawler, kind of think of Google's web spider out indexing web pages, can't really reach. So anytime you log in and you're in a place that you can only access with your credentials, that's the deep web. But nothing scary or illegal about it by nature.
So are there legitimate activities going on the dark web, or is the dark web pretty much all bad stuff?
Well, not to tease out too much of a research paper we have coming out soon, but actually a fair amount of the dark web is legal activity. This can range from standard clear websites that happen to have, you know, a version of their site up on a hidden service, Facebook, for example, or whistleblower sites where people can provide information, even just offbeat news sites talking about, you know, what the government doesn't want you to know or the UFO in my backyard, all perfectly legal activity.
All right. Emily Wilson, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and zero trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.